Blog Talk Radio.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. They say that there's only three types of people in the world. Those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. I'm talking mothers of special needs and very young children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, and a host of others. I can go on and on. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day, so you can survive your tomorrows, but not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally from the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we are going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds nasty, doesn't it? Well, we have an exciting show planned for you today, so stay tuned. I will be talking about all the things that you want to hear today. So don't go away. You do not want to miss this show. As I said, I am your host, Dave Nassani. And this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, oh yeah, and they're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency to put your own oxygen mask on first. You've heard it all before. They want you to put your mask on before you put your child's mask on. Now, that doesn't make any sense, does it? That sounds like a selfish thing to do, doesn't it? That's right. I can hear you nodding and agreeing with me. But the reason they tell you that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. Sound familiar, caregivers? And then you won't be of any help to anybody with anything. That's right. Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Listen, folks, unfortunately, there's only one way out of the grief process. And that's to go through the grief process. You can't go around it. Can't go over it. Can't go under it. You got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcasts, my books, my videos, my blog. I know it sounds like I'm saying my an awful lot, like it's all about me or something. No, it's actually all about you. So just go to my website, there's another my, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregiverscaregiver.com. Guess what? We are going to give you a free book. If you take our quiz, how to determine if you are a candidate for burnout. Short quiz. And just for doing that, we're going to give you a copy of my free book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. So if you've got a lot of hardships in your life, this book is for you. All right, enough of that. I'm going to get started with the show. I usually bring a guest on, but today I'm gonna be the guest. Yeah, I can do that. I'm the host. I have that right? Glad we settled that. What do I usually ask my guests? Dave, thanks again for allowing me to interview you today. I really appreciate it. No problem, Dave. All right, I'm getting too silly here. Let's talk about my book, for example, because a lot of you don't realize that I'm a caregiver. I mean, maybe you assume I'm a caregiver, but unless you actually heard my story or went to my website and heard, you know, how it is that I became a caregiver, you're kind of in the dark. It all started 20 years ago, and I got to tell you, I've been married for 40 years. That sounds like such a long time. I mean, just yesterday I was 21, and today I'm 61. Do the math, folks. That's 40 years. And it went so fast. And I know some of you who are older than me are saying, ah, he's just a young whippersnapper. Yeah, well, sometimes I don't feel like a young whippersnapper. This thing called arthritis makes me walk like an old man, makes me feel old, can't do the things that I used to do, run, walk, very well anyway. But I don't have to tell you that. You're all getting old, most of you. Even you 30-year-olds can't do things that you used to do when 19, right? Yeah, I know. Anyway, so my wife, we were married, happily married. We had a storybook relationship. Oh, gosh, we were married for 20 years. And she had a previous marriage that was abused in, and so she left him. He had given her two black eyes and a broken nose and didn't believe that you should give an abuser more than one chance. Actually, more than zero chances. So she didn't give many chances after she got beat up. She had two daughters, 5 and 12-year-old, and found herself all alone in the world. We met about 3 years later. Can't remember because it was so long ago. And we fell in love. And we did a whole bunch of things together for about 1 year and 3 months until we met God in a special way. We felt that we had to either get married, because marriage is sacred, or we had a breakup. And since we got along so great, we never fought, we never argued, which is kind of strange. Every time I tell somebody this, they say, what? Come on, what do you mean you never argued? You never had an argument? No, we really didn't. So I didn't want to, kick myself in the butt for the rest of my life by leaving a woman just because I did not want to get married or I was afraid to get married because everyone I knew was divorced. So I made a deal with God. I said, listen, God, let's talk. I will get married if you do one thing for me. Just got to do one little thing. Just got to make sure that I stay married and I don't get a divorce. If you would do that for me, then I will get married. And I will also serve you till the day I die. That was the deal. And I was dumb enough and stupid enough and innocent enough to believe that it would work. And 40 years later, guess what? It worked. They all says, what are you, crazy? Your wife is 10 years older than you. She has a crazy ex-husband. She has 2 kids from a previous marriage. You're still in college. You're only 21 and you want to get married? Are you crazy? So I made a list, the pros and the cons. And there was like 20 things on the cons and one thing on the pros. The one thing was, I love her. I don't want to lose her. And of course, everything was on the cons list. So we got married. In 10 days, my mother did a wedding in her backyard. In 10 days, she managed to get 100 people there. Can you imagine how many she would have got if she had 30 days? No, we don't want to imagine that. It was a great wedding. A few years later, we had our own baby together, Rebecca. 2 children were Debbie and Cindy. And life was good. It was so fun. This was her sacrifice to me because she was like 35 and saying, this is my sacrifice of love to you because the last thing I want is another baby and the pain that it takes to get the babies. But she did it And she said that, and I told her I didn't want one. You know, it's an evil world out there. I don't think we should bring children into the world. She says, no, you'll resent it one day, and you'll feel sorry you didn't have one. So I'm going to give you one now while I'm young enough, even though I'm old. So I really didn't understand the gravity of that comment until much later, as our daughter got older and older, and we realized what a sacrifice it is raising a child, and especially as they get older, where sometimes they break your heart. But of course, none of our daughters broke our hearts. All right. So they're all married today, thank God, to the men they love. Grandchildren, life is good. But what happened to Charlene 20 years later? Well, she had this headache of her life. She didn't know why she was having a headache, and she was going to go to the doctor, but then started to go away, so she didn't. And who likes to go to the doctor anyway? You know, they say, well, take 2 aspirin, call me in the morning, right? And they charge you, yeah, $100, please. So, I mean, we're not in a hurry to go to the doctor. We don't go to the doctor for every little thing. But she said, this headache is so bad, I want you to call Dr. Kevorkian to put me out of my misery. And for those of you who aren't old enough, he was a euthanasia doctor in the 70s who used to help people commit suicide, legal suicide, if there is such a thing, who were in pain or who were terminal, who wanted to die. The fourth day, the headache comes back, and it comes back with a vengeance, starts circling her head like a crown. I woke up, she wasn't in bed. I went looking for her. She was on the couch laying down, said she was trying to make her headache go away. I asked her if she wanted me to rub it like I did before, and she said yes. Yeah. So while I'm rubbing the head, she's watching this Shirley Temple movie. I'm talking to her. She's talking back. And then I noticed she stopped talking to me. And I asked her a question. And I says, well, that's strange, to myself. And I asked it again, and nothing. And I looked at her. She was conscious. She was looking at me. She looked different. Half her face was starting to droop. Half her body was starting to droop into the couch, slouch, you know. And I looked at her, and she had this strange look in her eyes, like she was looking through me. And her mouth, you know, was kind of like a camel chewing its cud. It was going up, opening and closing and opening, kind of like a baby does who doesn't have any teeth. You know, it was like trying to say their first words but couldn't quite spit it out. And I says, talk to me. Say anything. If you don't say a word, one word, I'm going to call 911. Well, she just kept giving me that baby look and called 911. They came immediately. I says, I don't know. Something inside of me says she's having a stroke, you know, half your face. He says, yes. They examined her. She is having a stroke. Where do you want us to take her? And I says, I don't know. We live in Burbank. Where would you take your wife if she was having a stroke? A close, small medical center. No, it wasn't a medical center. It was a rinky-dink private hospital about 5 miles from us, 5 minutes. Or we could go a little further, maybe 10 or 15 minutes, to the huge medical center. And now, if I knew what I knew now, what I knew then, what I knew now, what am I saying? You know what I'm saying. Then I would have said, go to the larger place. But they looked at each other and he says, smaller place, because it's closer. So that was a mistake. You know, it was Labor Day weekend. There was hardly anybody there. Their CAT scan machine, first of all, if you don't know, when you have a stroke, they need to see, are you bleeding or is there a blood clot? Either way will give you stroke symptoms. If it's a blood clot, then you need to get rid of the clot because there's a 3-hour window. So they've got this special clot buster drug called TCP or TSP or something like that. But first they want to make sure if it's a bleed, they don't want to give you that pill because you'll bleed to death, right? It makes your blood thin. So this CAT scan was so old and so blurry that they couldn't tell if it was a bleed or a blood clot. All they saw was this blurry white spot, you know, in her carotid artery. So they played safe and assumed it was a leak. So they did not give her the pill. She lost her speech. She lost her right side paralysis, never came back. Then, after it was too late, they moved place. And, of course, the neurologist says, oh, no, why didn't they just take the risk? Why didn't they bring her here first? You know, all great questions, which I hired an attorney to see if there was any resolve for us since she's disabled for life now. And no, there wasn't, because lawyers don't testify against themselves. And basically, they did a conservative, safe path, which medical malpractice insurance, it's very hard to sue a doctor for malpractice, even though lots of malpractice happens. So anyway, we're Christians. We say, hey, we're not going to cry over spilled milk. If something happened and we can't sue, then God allowed it to happen for a good reason, and good will come from it somehow. That was 20 years ago. And we didn't know that she would never get better. We had hope that she would eventually regain her speech, regain her right side, but she never did. And for 2 years, this is the grief process I'm talking about. It was rough. You know, part of the grief process is denial. This isn't happening to me. And after denial comes anger. I'm so upset this is happening to me. And then after anger comes bargaining with God. He's the only one who had the power. So you bargain with God. God, if you just heal my wife, I'll do this or that or whatever. When that doesn't work, the next stage is depression. You just say, oh my gosh, nothing's, you know, life is not worth living. And depression often leads to suicide. So you have to be real careful during the depression. But eventually you come to acceptance. And that's what it took her two and a half years to come to acceptance. And she was an amazing woman before. She was an interior decorator. She's a gourmet cook, wedding coordinator, crafts. She would make dolls. She would paint. I mean, you name it, this girl did it. Woman in control. And now she can't talk. She can't walk. Her grandchildren don't even recognize her because she looks different. She loses her car, loses her house because it was a two-story house. Business was too far away. We needed to move closer to my business. She lost everything, and she wanted to die. The spark in her eye was gone. And so it wasn't pretty. You know, you always hurt the ones you love, the ones you shouldn't hurt at all. The Mills Brothers, that song. And I was the one who loved her, and so I got the brunt of abuse. It was my fault that we had to sell her car. It was my fault we had to move. It was my fault. And I did feel a little guilty that I should have known more about strokes and those paramedics send her to the wrong hospital. But you know what? You have to believe that everything happens for a reason. If God allowed it to happen, it's okay. And I know easy for me to say because I wasn't the one who had the stroke. But these are all things she had to deal with. After we moved, you know, I had to move her kicking and screaming. And finally, I just says, you know what? If you want to stay here, well, we have to sell this house because we owe too much and we've got to downsize. And if you want, I'll get you an apartment. You can live close by to your kids who lived close in Glendale where we lived in Burbank. But I'm moving. I'm moving with or without you. And I know that sounds harsh, but, you know, I don't know if I actually would have moved without her, but it was a bluff that she needed to believe because it was hard on me. Either my business was suffering or she was suffering. I was commuting 19 years, 35 miles from Castaic to Burbank, and I couldn't keep doing it. I was trying to survive. Like in the plane, if I didn't keep my mask on first, we were all going down. What did I do? She finally came around when she knew that I was serious and I probably would move without her. She says, okay, kind of pantomimed and gestured with her hands. And finally we got that, yes, she wants to. She communicates well, even though she cannot talk, because 85% of communication is nonverbal. So she's learned how to talk with her eyes, talk with the dozen or so sounds, you know, like, ah, oh, she can say yes and no. She can say my name, and she can say a variety of sounds. I've seen her talk 20 minutes to a stranger in a restaurant while we're waiting for a table, and he did not realize that she cannot talk. So she's an excellent communicator. I says, great, let's go pick out a house. So she did. She picked out a house, and she was cool about it. I mean, you know, like not real excited about it, just kind of, you know, trying to punish me. So after almost a year or 6 months, I don't remember how long, she started to warm up. She says, well, maybe we should paint the walls, because she never lived in a house with white walls. You know, in these new houses, everything is white. Before that, she really didn't want to paint, didn't want to decorate, didn't want to celebrate Christmas, and she loved Christmas. So all of a sudden, she wants to paint the walls. Next thing she wants to do is decorate for Christmas. Next thing she wants to do is put on a dinner party. It's like, oh, great, the old Charlene is coming back. And she still only has use of one arm. You know, she's in a power wheelchair, still has use of a dozen words or so. But she has decided she's going to reinvent herself and do everything that she did before. And I know that seems impossible, but she's been doing it, man. She put on that dinner party. It was the best dinner party you've ever been to, if you'd have been there. She started decorating the house, sewing curtains. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I'd come home, she's like a one-arm wallpaper hanger. Now, it's true, I did have to help her with some things. But, you know, I'm just the spit. She's the polish. I was glad for her to come back and start enjoying life. And really, she made her peace with God and realized that God is sovereign. And for those of you who don't know what that word means, that just means that God is God, and he will do what he wants to do. In the Bible, there's a scripture that says, the potter can make two pots. One he can use for garbage, one he can use for a beautiful vase. And what right does the pot have to say to the potter, why did you make me this way? Does not the potter have the right to do whatever he wants? And basically, God has the right to do whatever he wants. He's God. You know, we're his creation. So we got through that. And she got better and better in her mind. When I say that, I mean she got more and more acceptance. There's different levels of acceptance. Where are we today? Well, we have been doing this for 19 years. God has been good. He used my wife to bless so many people in and out of the... I've written this book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. I have this radio show, and we help caregivers. And we help people who are stuck in the grief process. And we help people avoid burnout. Because I was burned out there for a while. What I learned, I teach. My wife has a smile on her face and hope in her heart. And she points up to heaven. And when people with their piddly problems by comparison say, oh my gosh, what the heck am I complaining about? This woman lost her speech, has paralysis in her right side. She can't do a lot of the things she used to do. And I'm upset because my husband lost his job. He can get another job and we're normal again. So even a lot of, you know, would look at me like, oh, you poor guy, you know, your wife, you lost your wife. And I says, well, it doesn't seem like I did. She's still the same woman. Yeah, she can't talk, but she can still communicate. Yeah, she lost half her feeling in her body, but she still got the other half. So, I mean, life seemed pretty normal for me. And the only thing I can say about that is that I think God just gave me grace. Charlene Grace, you know, what does grace mean? Grace is, well, let me compare it to mercy. Mercy is not getting things you deserve, usually bad stuff. And grace is getting good stuff that you don't deserve. So when I say God gave me Charlene Grace, means he gave me the temperament, the patience, the understanding, the kindness to put up with the bad part of being a husband to a stroke survivor, because there is bad parts to it. He gave me grace to put up with that and accept it like it was normal, like it was just a normal life. Now, maybe I can't with what you're going through. You know, maybe your child has leukemia and you have to watch them die. Maybe you have an autistic child and they require so much care. I don't think I could do that because I don't think I have the grace that. But you know what? You can't do what I'm doing because you don't have the grace to do that. So God gives everybody custom-made trials to get them through what he wants them to learn. And he also gives you the grace to go through it. And if you have it, you've got the grace to go through it. So that's my encouragement. Well, I think this is a good time for a break. So let us turn to our sponsor. I laugh because I'm my sponsor. It's a commercial about my book. So we'll be right back. Don't go away. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to that day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. And I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You'll be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchase it on the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your copy. Just go to OneArmOneLeg100Words.com. That's OneArmOneLeg100Words.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to take our short quiz to help you assess if you are a candidate for burnout. And if so, where you are in the burnout process. And just for doing that, Dave will send you a special gift. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast on his website. Go to caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregiverscaregiver.com. And now, let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And we're back, and I just shared with you basically from the time my wife had a stroke up until now, but I'd like to backtrack a little bit, talk a little more about the grief process. One aspect of the grief process that I didn't talk about is guilt. Some therapists believe that guilt is a part of the grief process, but others say that it's its own stage. Some people think, you know, that it's a stage of the bargaining. But I think Charlene wondered if she caused her own stroke by maybe some lifestyle or behavioral decisions that she made, which is a normal question. But actually, none of the risk factors for stroke applied. She didn't have blood pressure. She didn't have a family history of heart disease or stroke. She didn't have high cholesterol. She didn't have any heavy smoking or drinking. She didn't do any of that. Doctors really never pinpointed a cause of the blood clot that caused her stroke. I mean, she might have felt a little guilty about not going to an urgent care doctor, you know, after the second or third day, a headache. But on the other hand, I certainly did struggle with a lot of guilt because I discovered that I should have known more about strokes. I should have become a doctor. This wouldn't have happened if I was just more knowledgeable. So that's another reason why I wrote the book, why I do this show, to educate people to get more involved in your healthcare decisions. You cannot trust doctors. You cannot trust paramedics to make the right decisions on your behalf. They're just doing their job. And maybe it is policy that in 78% of cases, it's better to go to the closest hospital than the further hospital. If I knew that even though the odds might be, for example, 78%, my first question would be, well, what's the worst case scenario? What if we're wrong? What if we're part of that 22% that it's better to go to the further hospital? What happens? Well, you'll either die or you'll be disabled for the rest of your life. Well, many times Charlene had wished that she would have died because there are things worse than death. Her language, the very thing that separates us from the animals. Her language was taken away from her. And many, many times, she just didn't want to go on. She couldn't figure out how God could ever use her. But of course, God is using her. I know she would probably say, I'd rather be able to talk than to be in this position, but it's not her choice. Getting back to guilt, you know, it's normal to experience guilt after any tragedy. However, I forced myself to get over it. I knew that condemning guilt did not come from God. In fact, I always had a great analogy about guilt, and it sounds a little disgusting, but I'm going to share it anyway because that's just the way I am. Anyone who is struggling with guilt, I would share this. I decided to take my own advice finally because I told so many people about it that I finally had to do it because I was feeling guilty that I did the wrong thing and that I caused my wife's stroke. So here it goes. The guilt in my analogy is the poop. Well, let me back up. Guilt should be treated like a disposable diaper. But a diaper is designed for one purpose and one purpose only, to catch the poop from a baby, right? The guilt in my analogy is the poop. Now, there are two types of guilt. There's undeserved guilt and there's deserved guilt. Now, when you feel guilty, the first thing you ask yourself, is there a legitimate reason that I should feel this guilt? If the answer is yes, then correct the wrong. Apologize to the person. Fix what you broke. Call who you should have called. Turn yourself into the police. Whatever it is, fix it. Then take the diaper that the guilt is now in and dispose of it, never to see it again. If the answer to the above question, however, is no, I don't deserve this guilt, then make sure you can be honest. Make sure you can be fair. Make sure you can be objective. If you're not sure, then ask the opinion of a well-respected mentor. If the answer is still no, then there is no wrong to correct. You're innocent. The guilt is undeserved. No apology is necessary. There's nothing to fix. Nothing broken. No one to call. Take that same diaper with the same guilt in it, same poop, and dispose of it. You never have to see that again. In either case, the guilt or the diaper is gone. That's why they call it a disposable diaper, because once it is used, it is useless. In fact, if you don't dispose of it, it can actually cook that little baby's bottom and become very, very painful. Very, very painful, if not disposed of properly. Some people hang on to their guilt for months, for years, or forever. And they get sick, or their personality gets infected from this unresolved guilt. Now, some people are very good at dispensing undeserved guilt to others, like mothers, for example. Remember that show back in the 70s where Red Fox's character, Fred Sanford, he would routinely hold his chest, look up, you know, like he was having a heart attack, and say, Elizabeth, I'm coming for you, honey. Now, this comical skit seemed to work every single time to get his son, Lamont, to do whatever it is that Fred wanted him to do using this undeserved guilt trick. That's why I mention it to you, because guilt, I know people who are living their entire lives in guilt. Some of it deserved, some of it is undeserved. But if it's deserved, you know, do what I said. Just forgive yourself. Ask God for forgiveness. Forgive to whoever you did it to. Get rid of it. Like that diaper. And if it's not deserved, what the heck are you hanging on to it for anyway? Right? Okay. Well, I want to talk a little bit about depression and loneliness, because most suicides, as I said, occur when you're going through depression, when things just look hopeless, right? That's, people get depressed when they think that nothing can change. The doctors warned me about Charlene, my wife, not to leave her alone with her medications. And I didn't even realize that I should be concerned about that. But yet it made sense. And then I started having these visions of coming home and finding her dead on the floor, or waking up and finding her dead in our bed from a pill overdose, to finally prescribed an antidepressant. And it really helped her depression and my morbid visions also. Her faith allowed her to realize that if God wanted her dead, he would have taken her home when he had the chance or when she had the stroke. Therefore, she began to accept that she must still have for being alive. But she couldn't get there because she was too depressed. Now, there are reasons. One is their circumstances like hers, but also chemical imbalances in the brain, which certainly happen when you have a stroke like hers. So she was hit with a double whammy. Now, depression, of course, is a normal symptom of any stroke. And doctors prescribe antidepressants to take the edge off of a depression that is the result of a chemical imbalance in the brain caused by the stroke or whatever in this particular case. The patient not only feels depressed for all the obvious reasons, but also for the chemical imbalance, like I said. Many stroke victims and those that are depressed routinely take their own lives, according to doctors, which shocked me. He says men usually use a gun and women usually take an overdose of pills because they don't like guns. And I said, wow. Charlene was never suicidal, but she does get frustrated and cry more easily when she happens to run out of her low-dose antidepressants. Contrary to popular belief, antidepressant is not a drug that makes you dopey or gives you symptoms similar to being under the influence of alcohol or recreational drugs. It simply restores the chemical imbalance in the brain so that it functions normally again. So Charlene has no symptoms or side effects from depression today, and we're both very grateful for that. Now let's talk about loneliness. Again, therapists believe that loneliness is a part of the stage of depression, but others say it's its own next stage, and we're talking about the stages of grief. But it often does lead to depression, you know, if you're lonely. And it is hard to overcome when you lose your friends, your independence, and your ability communicate deep level as Charlene did. Now she had lost her dream house, her car. I mentioned before she lost her driving privileges, her ability to enjoy her hobbies and her volunteer work at church, her close bond with her 1.5-year-old granddaughter. Oh, that really killed her. My daughter was now like afraid of grandma. Fortunately, that bond was later restored as her granddaughter got older. Also, after a few months, most of Charlene's close friends, isn't this interesting, that she knew before her stroke just stopped coming around or calling. Only a couple of friends who are left after 19 years who still come by and visit her on a regular basis, and we are so grateful for that. She had hundreds and hundreds of friends because she was so popular at church and did so many things, but after 19 years of a stroke, thank God for the out of all those people who still come by and still show their love, still pick her up, still take her out to the movies, still take her out to dinner, still bring her things. God bless them. And those people are going to have special crowns in heaven as far as I'm concerned. And it just makes me feel so inadequate of how I should probably be doing that to people in similar situations. So I do what I can. I started this radio program. I wrote my book. I mean, we all do what we can. The beauty of acceptance, the final stage, which finally came in the third year. And people often think of stages lasting weeks or months. You know, they forget that stages are responses to feelings. You know, it can last for minutes or hours or days or months or years, or it can last forever. You know, we can flip in and out of one stage and then the other. We don't enter and leave each individual stage in a linear fashion. We may feel one, like depression, and then another one, like denial, and then another one, like anger, you know, in no particular order. At that time when Charlene finally reached a stage of acceptance for good, the seeds of faith that were sown into her heart finally sprouted and blossomed into a mighty oak tree of faith. You know, God allowed her to see the glass as half full instead of half empty. She started being positive about the future instead of negative. And even in the midst of negative circumstances, she could see positive. And that's a miracle as far as I'm concerned. She would smile a lot. She would often point up to heaven, like I said before, and touch her heart as if to say, God said it'll be okay. She retook control of her life. She redefined who she is, and she reestablished her own self-worth. And all this seemed to come about as a result of her reading the Bible, with scriptures such as "All things are possible to them that believe," Philippians 4:13. She chose to believe God's promises over her negative circumstances and physical limitations. Today, she's an amazingly self-confident, strong-willed path as a woman. Some would even say that she's a cross between a Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. And I totally agree. I mean, God has given us faith that she one day in his time and for us. I mean, even if we're wrong and that never happens, we're kind of okay with that. We trust him and we know that he'll do whatever is in our best interest. Again, attitude is everything. We have lost so much, but we're so thankful for all that we still have. So many others have lost more than us. We are truly blessed. I mean, one day we met a man who had a similar stroke to Charlene's. For 10 years, he was completely nonverbal. Then all of a sudden, his brain just kind of got it, and he started speaking. He told her, never give up. That meeting will be a constant reminder to Charlene that there's always hope, and God is always in control, even 19 years later. I still have hope that she'll speak again, and I know deep down inside she does. She tries not to expect too much. She's just kind of content with what she has. She says, if it happens, it happens. You know, because it's bad trying to get your hopes up and then it doesn't happen. It's a source it could turn into depression. I think she's just content with what she has and who she is. And of course, she has hope for the future. And if it doesn't happen here on earth, it'll happen in heaven. God promises to give us all new bodies. Bodies that don't get sick, that don't succumb to death, and he dry all our tears away. Okay, I know I'm talking about our faith now, but that is so important. That's kind of how we survive, how people survive without having faith in God, that there's a creator who's in control of all these things, that it's not just haphazard, that this world didn't just happen amidst the billions and billions and billions of stars and galaxies, that, you know, we just got lucky that life, you know, appeared on Earth and we appeared out of an amoeba. You know, I don't buy that. The Jews have been here for a long, long time, and God reached down and spoke to them, and we are adopted into that family, and that's what I choose to believe. And guess what? It works. Works for us. And we still believe in miracles. You know, God has performed many for us already. And Charlene has ministered, like I said, to countless individuals in her present condition more than if she was normal. And I think of that girl, Johnny Erickson Tada, who was paralyzed as a teenager in a diving accident. She now has a successful worldwide ministry for disabled people. And Charlene is also blessing more people now than before her disability. Our lives are truly in God's hands, and we hope he uses this book and this radio show and everything about us, the people who know us personally, to bless them. Well, and that, as Forrest Gump would say, and that's all I have to say about that. Well, I think it's time to take another break, so don't go away.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years, after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech-impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She she now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassar.
And we're back. And yes, that Carole King song used to be our old theme song. We've got to update that. But basically, for those of you who are just tuning in, we have been telling you how my life has been when we got married, through the stroke, after the stroke, that now there's a new normal. And so why is life so good now when things are so bad? Well, as I explained, our faith in God just kind of gives us a peace and an attitude that no matter what happens, because what's going through our lives is nothing unusual. Everybody is going through something. Think about it. Everybody you know is going through something. Nobody gets a free ride here. I think God divvies out the trials so that, you know, I don't think I would want to change places with anybody. You know, maybe there's a husband who doesn't have to deal with being a caregiver to his wife who had a stroke, but maybe he's doing something else. You know, I have peace knowing that I can handle what I have, and I don't know how I would handle anything else, and I'm succeeding at this. Maybe I would fail at that. That's why things are so good. A person who has peace and contentment with their lot in life, not wanting more, not always striving for more money or a bigger house or a better job. Not that you shouldn't want to better yourself, but some people take it too far. And enough is never enough. You know, what's enough? So that's a blessing, just finding contentment. And when that happens, no matter what happens to you, you know that God has allowed it to happen. So there's a great reason, and he's given you the strength to get through it. Like I said, there's only one way to go through a grief process. And grief happens every time we lose things. We lose things all the time. I mean, I'm losing my body. I can't do the things that this 61-year-old body used to do when it was 40. And that's a loss. There's a grief there. I had to sell my catamaran sailboat because it was too much work to sail it anymore. That was a loss. That was a grief. And I went through that grief quickly because I've learned how to go through the grief process. Something happened back when the stock market and the real estate market melted down. I lost my life savings because of a couple of bad decisions that normally worked every time I did them. But all of a sudden, the rules changed and it didn't work anymore. And I lost a lot of money. My entire retirement fund gone, evaporated. And now I was in danger of losing my home because part of the debts, you know, I'm a businessman, I'm an entrepreneur, so I believe in leverage. But let me tell you, you should never leverage your personal home that you live in. Very, very dangerous. But when the economy is great, there's a fallacy that it's going to always be great, and the end of the world will never come. You know, the sky is falling, paranoia never will happen. Well, one day the sky will fall. Bible says it will. I suffered my own financial stroke. Charlene lost everything that she lost. I lost. I'm a businessman, so obviously the most important thing to a businessman is the money, because that's what a businessman does. I had to come to grips saying, okay, got to practice what I preach here. If this is happening for a reason, yes, I made my fault. I made a couple of bad decisions, but who knew, right? And besides, even though God gives grace, yes, he also gives consequences for your actions. But whatever it is, you'll get through this. So here it is, 6 years later, and he's totally restored my fortune. And I'm very grateful for that. It was a miracle. I don't know how he did it. I tell you, this stuff works. God, faith in God works. And I would encourage you to try God. He says, I will never leave you. Times are good or when times are bad. And isn't it funny? When times are good, we don't need God because we're in control. No, God, when things get bad, I'll come to you. Well, he wants us in our good times and our bad times. That was my lesson. So I feel like I have something in common with Charlene now. We both suffered a stroke and we both survived. I wouldn't trade this experience for millions, but I also wouldn't repeat it for billions because it was hard. It was a hard lesson to learn. I mean, it's like reading the book. You know how it ends, but while you're going through the book, you don't know how it ends. We could have lost our house. I know many people who did. Better people than me. Why didn't I lose my house? And they did. I have no idea. You know, am I holier than them? Absolutely not. Am I better than them? Absolutely not. Again, the pot should not ask the potter. Everything we have is for a reason, and he gives us grace to go through whatever he gives us, whatever he allows to have happen to us. Now, bad things happen through the devil. Yes, there is a devil. If you believe in God, you have to believe in a devil and his demons. And that's God allows the devil to test us so that he can bring us through that trial and give the devil a black eye, so to speak. So what does all this mean now? Well, I want to tell you something about attitude. I have a poster on my wall with a quote from Pastor Charles Swindoll, and I'm sure he got it from somebody. And here's how it goes. The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of attitude on life. Attitude to me is more important than facts. It's more important than the past, than education, than money, than circumstances, than successes, than what other people think or say or do. It is more important than appearance, giftedness, or skill. It will make or break a company, a church, a home. The remarkable thing is we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we will embrace for that day. We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that people will act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play on that one string we have, and that is our attitude. I am convinced that life is what happens to me, and 90% how I react to it. Wow, that says volumes. Because I truly believe that unless you have the right attitude, you're not going anywhere. You will never be successful in life. I truly, truly believe that. Well, I think we've come to the end of our time, so I'm going to say goodbye. And I hope you enjoyed my story. And it's a good story, but just remember my advice, if I'm to give you advice, give you a takeaway. First of all, have a consistent daily habit of prayer or talking with God. It's absolutely essential. I mean, it should be as natural for us as talking to each other, talking with God. Because prayer doesn't have to be something magical or holy or thou, Father, blessest me before thy holy, you know, you just talk to him like I'm talking to you. You know, he's proven himself to us time and time again. And as a result, we no longer believe in coincidences. We try to constantly devote a block of time in our schedule for God time. We use this time to pray, quiet our minds, just to be still and listen to what God is saying in our spirit. Next, we listen to positive messages on CDs or iPod. We happen to love Joyce Meyer's practical and relevant teaching. I also listen while I drive in my car. By the way, if you like Joyce Meyer or you've never heard of her, check her out, www.joycemeyer.org, or just go to www.youtube.com, you know, YouTube, and type in Joyce Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R, if you're interested. Lastly, I pray, my wife and I, that the armor of God over us, it's recorded in Ephesians 6, 10 to 18, and you can read about it if interested. Basically, you know, the breastplate of righteousness, the shield of faith, the helmet of salvation, the belt of truth, our sandals with the gospel of peace, and the sword of the Spirit, the shield of faith, to protect us from spiritual attacks. Put it on every day. Now, the purpose of that I wrote, which, by the way, you can get a free ebook copy of by just going on my website, caregiverscaregiver.com, and taking our short quiz, we're going to send you a book. So anyway, the book is designed to expand Charlene's influence to a larger audience. Well, namely, the rest of the world, because our radio show goes out to the entire world. We hope that she has been a blessing and inspiration to all that read her book and hear the radio show. I mean, she really does have a destiny and a purpose in life. And I know I talk about her a lot. She encourages people. Excited for the book. We're excited for this radio show. We're excited to communicate our story of facing and overcoming unbelievable hardships while finding peace in the midst of unsettling and uncontrollable situations. So thank you again for taking the time to listen to the show, to take the quiz, to read our book. Feel free to visit our website, caregiverscaregiver.com, for support. We have a lot of stuff on that website. So goodbye. Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.